Hi, I'm Kyle.
And I'm Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form
the Experience Grind Podcast.
We're good or bad, better or worse, we will grind out every experience we encounter and give our honest opinions on those experiences. Welcome. Thank you for joining us today. Today is very special for me, Ryan, because...
Why is that, Kyle?
We are experiencing my number one favorite movie of all time.
What is that movie?
Punch Drunk Love, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah, 2002,
starring Adam Sandler.
Emily Watson.
Emily Watson, thank you. I could not think of her beautiful name.
The Mattress Man.
Oh, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Louise Guzman.
Oh, he's just side dressing. I think he has like one line of dialogue.
He has so many. He's his best friend.
He just stands there. He's like, okay. That's all he does.
So I'm very excited about this one because...
It's your number one movie of all time.
We are
at
number
one favorite movie.
You know, when we started this podcast, this was what we had. We had our five favorite movies, our five favorite games.
Yes.
We have reached the point where we are at my number one movie. This is a monumental episode for us, buddy.
It means we have to be like...
We're getting...
15? No, that's not right. 10 in?
You know, we're not a flash in the pan. This wasn't something we did for like a couple weekends and just got over it. No, we're in this, dude.
I think it's going into month four.
Yeah, we're committed. We're banging this shit out. And I'm happy. I think we got the best stuff coming up.
Oh, we have so many good things on the pipeline.
Like, I'm very excited. I'm happy where things are. I'm happy with where they're going.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
We're growing all the time. We're getting even better as friends than what we were. I mean, dude, we have a show together.
Yeah, like, yeah.
That's cement to a friendship.
It is.
You know, like in like 10 years when this show ends, we'll always be like, oh yeah, me and this dude, we hosted a show together. And this guy, we're like this, and I'm crossing my fingers, America.
Wait, did you what? Cross our fingers, and then we cross our arms.
That's
what we are.
That's best friend cross, y'all.
Yeah.
Deal with that. So... It's exciting. I'm very excited. I've said that a lot, but I really am, man. This is a big thing. We are at the number one, and we'll get into it. But you know, you and I usually like to break it down and talk about a question. I think this question I'm about to ask you might be the most personable one, but I think it's fitting for this episode.
It makes sense.
So you know, I want to get in, and I don't want to give names, but I just want to know, what was the first time you remember a girl breaking your heart, Ryan?
Well, I didn't have too many girlfriends in elementary or middle school.
Yeah.
High school stuff was
I don't think
never
really
serious.
Count. Yeah, I mean, none of that really counts. Yeah.
So I have to go with one of my first college experiences, which was a girl I got involved with who really came on to me because I was, like, nice and noticeably, like, better than other people. So it was, like, it started off on a good note. I don't know. It was a really good, quick kind of passion thing.
It burned fast.
As soon as, like, if I were to ever take a step back, I would say, something's not right here. I'm not enjoying this. This isn't working. This
really?
I don't like. If I had ever stopped to take a second to look, because we are very different people, so many things happen. But she, no shit, up and moved. Just, we were together, there was no breakup or anything, she was just gone from the university.
And she didn't even tell
you. All her stuff was packed out, her roommate was like, yeah, she left, didn't say anything about it.
Weird, man.
Right? This is like a month or two into it, like it wasn't anything serious.
Oh, so it didn't even go that long.
No,
so.
But it goes back to that very quickly and dumb, because it was my first college experience, so like I was kind of foolish about it too.
So do you think she was your first like love?
No, not at all. But my heart was broken at the time.
Okay.
But the big kicker to the story is so she just up and disappears. Slowly, I start piecing things from her roommate. I get like an email that says like, oh, I'm sorry I did this, Ryan, and I had to do this, and I'm struggling in college and all this. I find out later that she was married.
Whoa.
Yeah.
In college?
Yeah. She was apparently in separation though, in that separation year. So she was still legally married, but trying to get away from this guy. And then this entire time we were dating, she was in the first trimester of a pregnancy with said man and was having a baby.
Wow, dude.
I found out 6 months after she just up and disappeared all this information, and it was like not vindication, but kind of vindication.
Dude,
like
that's heavy.
Missed something really, really that could have been bad for me.
Oh yeah, you definitely dodged a bullet, but
yeah.
Damn, dude, that's I was not expecting any of that.
Yeah. So I get a lot of jokes when I go home about family day at college where my girlfriend brought her whole family and kind of shitty stuff. But hey, yeah, man, that's a big thing.
If your friends can't rib you, you ain't got friends, dog.
Yeah, there you go.
But damn, dude. Wow, that's heavy.
Isn't it weird?
That's it's weird. Just
fucking disappeared.
Disappeared, was married and pregnant.
Yeah, it was a
wow, damn, dude.
Interesting 8 months of news developments for sure.
Well, so I guess I'll get into mine. Was very similar. It was very quick burning.
Okay.
As a lot of early romances are. I started dating this girl I had just broken up with. I was 19 or 20 at the time. I think I was 19.
Okay.
I had recently graduated high school. I had my first real job, and I met this girl there after my girlfriend had dumped me. We just were flirty and just kind of fell right into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, same thing. There are some things I should have noticed. Weird little tiffs, but so wrapped up in each other that they got pushed aside.
Yeah.
But then this girl really got her hooks into me pretty hard, and we dated for exactly a year.
Oh.
And I know it's exactly a year because she dumped me on our one-year anniversary.
Wow, that's horrible.
Yeah.
I need to know more,
really
though.
Really hurt. I mean, well, I don't – it's just – I don't know what else to say. I mean,
so on your anniversary did you see this coming?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, things are kind of starting to be written on the wall, but I, you know, come on, you can't give me another week. Don't.
Yeah. You don't do it on an anniversary or a birthday. That's fucking tacky.
It was dick, and it really hurt, and it messed me up for a good, like, probably 4 or 5 months, if I'm being honest. I was really caught up on this chick. I was pathetic. I'd call her. I'd text her all the time. And like, come on, get back together. I miss you. I love you. You know, just that bullshit. You know, and, you know, the thing with me is I'm still friends with her. Mm-hmm. I'm still friends with a lot of my ex-girlfriends, actually.
That's good.
I mean, you know, it's never harsh. And, you know, I understand that people grow, people change, people move on, and it's nobody's fault. But
agreed.
At that time, it really fucking hurt me.
It feels it. But with time and distance, like, you learn, like, well, I wasn't right for her. She wasn't right for
me. Exactly. It was one of those types of things. You know, we just, that's the way things move on. You know, that's just life. And I'm never going to be one to get hung up on life, especially now. I feel I'm a much more mature person.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand things better. At the time, I was full of angst and anger and all that. But yeah, that was my first real big heartbreak. I'd say that's that was rough. The first girl I really loved, too.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That just made it hurt all the more. So yeah, that's my big one.
That's rough.
But that's life, I think. And very similar, you know, we'll segue into this movie.
Yeah.
Which is about the complete opposite.
Death.
No, it's not about the heartbreak. This is about the beginning, that first instances of it. This is Punch Drunk Love.
Punch Drunk Love by Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah, who's directed many other things such as
Boogie Nights.
Great movie.
There's another. Magnolia. That's the one that's my favorite.
Really? Magnolia?
I love Magnolia.
I like it, but it's not my fave.
Yeah, people disagree with me all the time. And then what's the
Drink Your Milkshake. Oh, man. That's one of my favorites. There Will Be Blood.
That's it. Yeah, that's his other one. Oh, God. The Master, too, which is really amazing.
Mm-hmm. And that was Philip Seymour as well, who's also in this.
Yes.
He's great in this.
Yes.
So I'm going to let you take this a bit, and I'll keep coming back in, because, you know, this is my number one, and I think I'll get into how my feelings come into this as we go along. So,
well, as you so quickly and eloquently put it, succinctly is the word, Punch Drunk Love is the story of a new relationship.
Yeah.
It is about Barry Egan, who is played by Adam Sandler, who's kind of an introspective, quiet man who doesn't necessarily have everything in his life together, who's prone to bursts of rage, and he has, like, a really bad temper.
Yeah.
Wow.
I classify him as incredibly socially awkward.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And emotionally stunted.
That's a good way to put it.
My very first note here is loneliness / isolation. You get that, I think, because the very first scene is a giant wide open room, and it's just him at a desk on the phone talking to, you're led to believe he's a businessman of some sort. He's wearing a blue suit, and he's trying to hash out a business deal, and he tells the guy at the end of the phone, well, you have my home phone too, right? And he's like, why do I need your home phone? Yeah. And Barry is really, he just wants people to talk to him. He wants to, you know, call him at home. He's lonely. He's fucking lonely.
Yes.
But he can't come out and say it. He doesn't know how to express that.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, dude, Adam Sandler's so goddamn good in this movie, man.
He is.
Like, what is he doing with all this other bullshit?
Easy Money. And vacations to wherever he wants to make his movies.
Dude, there's so many times in this movie where I forget that it's Adam Sandler. Like,
yeah.
He is totally, like, it is not Adam Sandler. This dude has fucking chops. He's wasted, man.
This is the only time he's ever showed it.
Yeah, I know, man. And I think it lends a lot of credibility, too, to probably Paul Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, he does something with Adam Sandler that I don't think any other actor could do. And he had to have known the part, like,
yeah,
knowing what he was, and Adam Sandler does it very, very well.
I could not see anybody else doing this, because
no,
Adam Sandler has that quiet rage that is just beneath the surface, and that's what Barry has.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes out.
Yeah,
man, it's so, I'm sorry,
go well ahead. No, also, yeah, in praise of Adam Sandler, though, he's doing something that could easily become a caricature. Like,
yeah, it could
very easily be like Little Nicky or like a Billy Madison. No, not that. The who's the other one? The
Happy Gilmore.
Golfer. Yeah, Happy Gilmore. It could easily be something like that.
Absolutely.
Where it is, or just a jokey character.
Or not so much jokey, but it could be over the top.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, and hammed up like Emperor Palpatine. And,
yes.
And the prequel. Yeah. Like exactly, yeah, like that. And it's not ever even close to that.
Which I think Adam Sandler deserves a lot of, yeah, credit and notes for.
There's
because
a lot of nuance in that. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I think if you ask anybody if they thought he'd pull something like this off, they would not have thought this.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable. Yeah. So Barry, man with rage, lonely, isolated from the world.
Yeah.
His world is turned upside down, right?
Yes. Well, and
sorry,
and
I was trying to segue you.
You were
to our next character, but
Before she gets there, a very, very, very big thing happens in this movie, and I've always, yes, been confused about this next part, and that is the car crash.
Yeah, and then the harmonium, yeah, being delivered.
The harmonium I've come around to. The car crash, I get different things each time. And what happens is, you know, Barry walks to the end of the street, and all of a sudden there's just a car driving down, and for no reason, it just flips.
Yep.
And over, there's no collision, no nothing. And it's never addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, what is your interpretation of that?
I don't know what the interpretation is supposed to be there. It feels very David Lynch-like.
Yeah.
It is just kind of an odd thing that happens for art's sake.
Yeah.
And maybe it's interesting. Maybe it's to believe that it's supposed to just completely say, like, this is a surreal world. This is not the real world. So any things you might find jarring, it's okay because it's surreal. Maybe it's a proclamation of that in the movie's kind of intent towards the surreal. Color theory-wise, like, it's orange and red, which is a prominent theme for love and passion. So love flipping over, I don't understand. Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly. And this most recent time that I did watch it, that, you know, knowing that that is coming and never fully getting it.
Did you see something?
I kind of saw it a little differently this time. You said it was very surreal and that it's setting up and maybe letting you think or accept surreal things in this movie. But that's the only surreal thing that happens in this movie to me. And it's very jarring in that fact. And what I've come to interpret it myself now is that I see it as Barry's own control and the fact that, like, it's the car is doing fine and then for no reason it's flipped and it's lost complete control.
Okay.
And I see it as sort of like his emotional state.
It mirrors his inside.
And that's why it's also never referenced.
Okay.
Or, you know, it is the only surreal thing in this movie.
Yeah.
And so that's,
well, Paul Thomas Anderson does that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's the frogs raining in Magnolia for, like, almost no reason.
Yeah.
So I could see it just being a one-off throw-off.
That's what I've come to. It's Barry's internal mechanics in the fact that with the flip, everything's
just
gone.
Just like his rage.
Yeah, everything is just changed and gone wonk and has no control for however period of time. And then the red taxi pulls up and delivers the harmonium, which is also a very central theme of the movie. And I think the harmonium also represents Barry.
You know, I'm just thinking, You have the car crash followed immediately by the harmonium, which is like a giant source of good and calm in his life. It gives him the control back. It could just be like, there's something really bad that happens before something good happens. So yeah. Like, no matter how bad it is right now, i.e. your loneliness and isolation, something good's going to happen, which is Emily Watson's character.
And she shows up immediately after the harmonium shows
yes.
up.
Yes. So it could be that, it, too.
When she first shows up, she throws Barry off. She talks to him, and he's not used to that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's obviously very interested in her, but he doesn't know how to process that, which is very, again, like a car crash.
Yeah. You should. I want to mention real quick that Barry, you mentioned his blue outfit.
Yeah.
And the reason that's important is because this film plays a lot with colors.
Oh, man.
And Lena's main color is red. So from the get-go, you see her in red.
Mm-hmm.
But even before, like after she leaves, like the cool stuff that Paul Thomas Anderson does is he's always kind of like showing Barry which way to go to get to her with red. So like as she's going out and Barry approaches the white, a giant red truck goes in the background, like on her path to lead her.
Yeah.
So there are color palettes here, and it's just Lena's is red, and there's a lot of interesting stuff there.
It's very artsy. And,
yes.
But it's very well done, man. Like, you know, and after Lena leaves, then Barry he starts getting calls from his sisters.
Are the worst.
They keep interrupting him as he's trying to do business. He's a business owner. He has like gimmicky plungers and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to do this business deal and his sisters keep calling him. At least three call him and ask him if he's coming to a party tonight. And somebody finally asks one of the guys he's like, well, how many sisters do you have? And he's like, seven. Dude has seven sisters. He's the only brother. So that there again gives you some of the awkwardness to this character growing up as the only male in a house full of females.
One of the nice artistic touches is there's a shot where he's breaking the panes of glass in like a fit of rage. You can see on the wall like all seven sisters are on one side of the wall in a portrait and in a bunch of different photos, and then Barry's all on the other wall by himself in a portrait.
Yeah.
So it's a nice visual storytelling that shows just how isolated these sisters have made him feel.
Well, and you get that from the moment he walks into this party. You can tell he doesn't want to go.
Yeah.
But they've badgered him into going.
Yeah.
And so he gets there and immediately they're talking about these times when he was a child and they called him gay boy and it made him so angry. And he's trying to play it off that he doesn't know what they're talking about. But if you understand that he totally does. And he just he's trying to not relive that again because he hated it. And it really starts to give you the first inklings of Barry's rage. Because they talk about him going crazy and breaking stuff with a hammer.
Yep.
I we talked about this a lot in Drive. Do you get an autistic feel from Barry in this? Because I feel almost during the party, it becomes sort of a sensory overload.
A little bit.
And he can't process, and doing so, that's when he breaks these three panes of glass and just...
I kind of do. And you said it yourself, it might not even be autistic or whatever, but he is so socially stunted that it's very awkward watching him. It is like somebody who just doesn't understand other humans at all. So I don't know about autistic, but there's definitely... There's something socially off with Barry.
After he breaks the glass, this is coming up to one of my first favorite scenes in this movie, and it's when he's talking to the brother-in-law in the laundry room.
Okay.
And he's asking if he can give him help because he's a doctor, and he's like, well, Barry, I'm a dentist. And he's like, you know, can you just help me find somebody to talk to? He's trying to get, you know, a shrink or somebody to help him. And, you know, he really starts to open up that he doesn't like himself. And he says he sometimes cries uncontrollably for no reason. And then he starts weeping right there. And, dude, it's just... The thing... I'll go ahead and break off here. The thing I love about this movie is that it makes me feel so many emotions.
Okay.
And it makes me feel more emotions than any movie I've ever seen.
Okay.
You know, it makes me feel joy. Makes me feel sadness. Makes me feel anger. Makes me feel awkward. It just takes me through this barrage of feelings that even still on this watching, you know, I haven't watched it in a long time, and I was actually kind of worried, like, will this actually hold up and still be my number one favorite movie? Absolutely, hands down it is. And I don't know if it's, do I relate to Barry on some level? And I think I absolutely do, especially at the time that I had seen it. It was when I was going through a tumultuous times in my life, you know.
Yeah.
I felt awkward. I felt weird. And so, you know, I guess sort of on that level, But yeah, that part really, really gets into me when he just starts weeping. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, it's Adam Sandler is fucking fantastic in that scene.
So okay.
What do you feel? You're just kind of agreeing with me here. What do you got?
I'm letting
on?
You speak. I wanted you to get. I wanted it all to come out because I didn't want to interrupt that. That was a great, beautiful thing there.
I got a little weepy eyed too.
Yeah, it was a good thing. Yeah.
This movie, I will fully admit, makes me weep. I cried a couple times in this movie again. Love this movie, dude.
I'm glad it had such an effect on you.
Yeah.
I remember being much more affected by it when I was in college, maybe because I was also in a similar time. But watching it this time, it didn't resonate with me as much. I know you said you saw yourself in Barry. And I think there are things there, but for me, at this point now, I don't see myself in Barry anymore. So it was harder for me to relate to it as much. And that's not to say, like, by any stretch of the means, like, it was a bad movie. Or he was bad, or it's a bad character. It's a great movie. I just found myself connecting with it less.
Okay, yeah.
Later years on the line, just a little.
And again, you know, that's a testament to people growing. I don't see myself in Barry anymore either, but I don't know if I just see myself back then, or, you know, again, dude, I cannot get over how good Adam Sandler is in this movie and the range that he makes me feel. Like, he does a really good job of pulling things out of me. Like, when, you know, he's lonely, and this is where the movie really starts to get its hooks in. He calls a phone sex line, and, you know, he doesn't want phone sex. He just wants to talk to somebody. He wants somebody to just listen to him talk because he's fucking lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's when things start to go off the rails because the phone sex line worker is actually running a scam. And she calls him the next morning claiming that, you know, she needs help for rent.
Mm-hmm.
And Barry had opened up to her that he owns his own business. And so she assumes to mean that means that he has a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So she starts to try to weasel it out of him. He had mentioned the night before that he had a girlfriend when he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And she starts to try to blackmail him, saying, you know, well, maybe I should call back and ask your girlfriend for the money. And it just really throws Barry off.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets upset. And I think at some point, I wish I would have written this down, one of my notes here. I know he punches a wall in a fit of rage.
He punches it several times.
Yeah, but
he breaks the bathroom stalls, and then he goes back to the thing after he learns the frequent flyer miles. He has to wait 6 weeks.
That's when
he punches the wall behind him.
And that's he punches the map.
Yeah.
And when he pulls his knuckles away, something I've never noticed.
There's letters.
And it says love. I've never noticed that until this time.
Yeah.
I thought that was fucking great. It was just a nice little touch. I'd never noticed it. It's, again, one of those things. I love it because you pick up new things every time. Mm-hmm. Like my interpretation of the car crash. I had never had that until I watched it this time. So.
Well, I picked up on this, and maybe you have too, but I keep going back to the colors because it's so smart what they do with the colors. But Barry Egan at the very beginning of the film is shown very isolated. He's in the blue. He has a blue tie. And then after he meets Lena, I don't know how you say it, Lena.
Lena.
Yeah. After he meets Lena, like, they have their kiss. And then he starts to have a red tie on, like she's infecting him, warming his heart if you want to. Or he's, you know, it's her color. And the same thing, like, after their first kiss, they're in the car talking, I think, at one point, and there's a blue light shining over her face, slowly creeping on, like he's now infecting her too. So it's like just a little visual color trick to show a lot more than some stories tell you in dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
great storytelling.
They have so many smart touches in this film.
And, you know, as we've talked about, you know my taste in film. I'm a giant fan of showing and not telling.
Yes.
Show me the story. Let me figure it out myself.
Yes.
You don't have to fucking play it out for me. And this movie totally does that.
It's very understated.
Yeah.
Nothing is over the top. The most over the top stuff is probably the cinematography, because...
That and Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, well.
But he's supposed to be over the top.
I like it.
Well, I do too. I'm not knocking it at all. It's great.
I do like it.
It's great what he does in this.
It's what I would expect The Mattress Man to act like.
Scummy,
I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what else you got? Let me get it. You got a lot more notes than me.
Well, it's a lot of stuff we talked about too. Just speaking to the cinematography, good God, is this a beautiful movie?
Yep.
It's the way they use their light is so dynamic, and it's just so smart. The contrast is not only like good and visually appealing, but like the first time Adam Sandler gets the harmonium, he's like silhouetted, essentially. He's darkened. And as he starts to play, the light slowly creeps onto his features, lighting up his face. The lighting is so good. And like, I can't, most movies, you don't even notice the lighting, but this one, it's done really, really well. The soundtrack too,
yep,
is incredible.
I wish I would have looked up the composer, because he does a great job of incorporating every aspect of it. And even at the end, he actually, when Barry's just playing the harmonium, mm-hmm, the music score comes in and plays off of that and brings it together, much like, and then Lena's hugging him at the end.
Yeah.
It's showing Barry being completed via the harmonium and the musical score.
Yeah.
It's such a nice little touch.
It's good. And it's like very, it has like a percussive beat. It's very like, almost like Birdman-esque.
Well, the percussive stuff really comes in when he's off kilter.
Yeah, which is, like, I'm thinking probably from the first half of the movie,
yeah, that's like when his sister's around and stuff. That's when it's
great. The music fits for the scenes it's in.
Yeah,
like and then you get the romantic swells.
Yes.
During
so many romantic swells.
It's a fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah, it's a fantastic movie, man.
Yes,
I can't call any movie perfect, and it's all self.
Yeah.
Fulfilling, you know.
You bring things to it too,
exactly.
And so this movie won't necessarily hit everybody the same way.
But it definitely hits
me
the
same. You, it is. And that's cool. That's what makes all movies great.
Yeah.
Like, you can't shit completely on any one movie, because somewhere, somehow, it touches somebody.
Yeah.
Paul Blart Mall Cop 2
somebody's
affected
fucking
somebody.
Somebody's giggling their ass off on that.
Yes.
Movie. I agree.
Crying profoundly.
But I would like to just take this and please never mention that movie in context with this movie
ever again. Well, I mean, it's a very thin connection because Adam Sandler, Kevin James, but.
I give you.
All right.
No. So,
this is not a Kevin James movie.
No.
Not at all.
So, Lena travels a lot for work.
Yes.
She works with one of Barry's sisters, who...
Mm-hmm. Gail the Snail from Always Sunny is how I know her.
She had a picture of Barry, and it caught Lena's eye, and she actually wanted to meet Barry.
Mm-hmm.
So, she does, and, you know, things start to go well. And the best that they can. They do have a connection.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have kissed.
And at no point is he hiding himself. Like, he's being completely open and honest,
absolutely,
and saying everything. Like, he's... So that's appreciated.
And they go out before he gets kicked out of the restaurant for breaking the bathrooms, she's mentioned that, you know, she travels for work a lot, and she's actually got to go to Hawaii at the end of the week. Mm-hmm. And he's like, maybe I have to go to Hawaii too for business things. And... she's like, oh, well, that would be great. Maybe we could meet up there if you did. And so he's figured out early on, when he's by himself and just being Barry, that through some weird marketing error through Healthy Choice Snacks, he could potentially earn a lifetime supply of air miles.
Yeah. It's because the pudding cups, there's a barcode on
each
individual cup.
And it could count for, and then with a coupon. Yeah. But, you know, that really happened, too.
Yeah.
In real life, that was an actual thing. And
I didn't know that, but I'm sure something like that would have happened.
A guy actually did that, and it was with Healthy Choice Pudding. That was an actual promotion.
Oh, that's interesting.
Every part of that was completely true. Even Healthy Choice tried to renege on it for a little bit, and... eventually, like, he's like, he won out, and mm-hmm. they had to give him all the miles.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, but that was totally true.
Yeah.
He decides that he wants to go see her in Hawaii, and he's going to use these air miles to do it. And so he buys a massive, insane amount of pudding to do it.
Which, there are so many lines in this movie, and it's very Arrested Development, like the recurring joke. People keep asking, what's up with that pudding?
So what are you going to do with all that pudding? Are you going to sell it?
And it just keeps getting funnier every time it comes up.
And so he's eventually on the phone with the people from Healthy Choice, and they're telling him that, you know, we agree with you, but it's going to take at least 6 to 8 weeks to process this. It doesn't matter. And that's when Barry becomes upset, and he punches the map, and then...
gets the love on his hand,
which was a great touch. So after all of that and all the pudding mishaps, he just decides, screw it, he's going to fly to Hawaii anyways. And what I love about that was that Barry was absolutely out of his comfort zone. It was his first time on a plane, his first time doing anything of this nature, and he did it all for Lena, which is huge. And I think it shows a lot about the power of love. And, you know, I can tie it in with you. Have you ever... been in a cave before you met your wife?
No.
How many caves have you been in now that you are with your wife?
Over 10 at least.
And do you do it because you like going in caves?
No, I don't like them at all.
But you do it because you love your wife.
I love my wife.
And she takes you out of your comfort zone a little bit.
There it is.
But you do it for her, right?
This was a 13 episode experiment by Laura to get me to prove I love her on podcasting. No, you done it.
Call out to our number one super fan, your wife,
broke
Laura.
It.
Your wife, Laura, is our number one super fan, but she will hear
She's
this.
She's one of them. Yeah. I don't know. I think we have some other ones, too.
We do, actually.
We love our fans, by the way.
But, yeah. So, that's a big thing, though. I mean, especially not so much for you. You're not awkward like Barry.
No.
You're a pretty confident dude for as nerdy as we both are.
Yeah.
I mean,
I have no right to be this confident.
No, you really don't need to do I, but I'm also pretty damn confident.
Yeah.
For...
Yeah.
When I
it's why we gravitate towards each other.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Power. Our powers combined. Oh, what is it? Ultimate power.
Oh, do it. Do it.
I was trying
to do
it. Emperor.
Palpatine, right?
Yeah.
That's what I was going with.
Yeah, yeah. Do it. So, bringing it back to an actual good movie. But yeah, so I love that aspect that she didn't ask him to do it at all. He did it because he wanted to see her, wanted to see her reaction when he showed up in Hawaii. Yeah.
I would argue it's that, and he was also desperate to get out of there because of the scam, though. It kind of worked in his favor.
Exactly.
It worked in his favor.
Because of the telephone scam, and these people are constantly calling him now.
Yes.
And threatening him at work,
mm-hmm.
That they have his credit card information and all this stuff.
Which, you said your favorite scene was one of them was the bathroom scene with Barry and the dentist talking about...
Yeah, that was one of my first favorites.
That's one of your first favorites. My favorite is the three-way Lena meeting Barry in the warehouse. As the sister's calling, the phone's ringing, he's getting threatened by these mattress people, and then like the forklift in the background's going wrong, and they still have like their kind of first date interaction while this is all happening. It's just
I love when the
a
dude
brilliant scene.
I love when he crashes the forklift and Lena's like, do you want to check on them? And he walks over and just taps the wall. He's like, hey, you guys okay? Great. And then he just walks right back and starts talking to her again, because that's what he cares about. He cares about Lena.
It's a perfectly paced, edited, acted scene. It's so tight and it's so funny.
And again,
it's good,
you know, again it what I was talking about, all these different emotions. And that scene makes you feel on edge and awkward, but also a little happy. Because he's actually into this girl. This is a different Barry than we've been exposed to for the rest of this movie. And it gets you hooked in and it grabs you. And I love that aspect of it. And I love when he goes to Hawaii, man, and he's trying to find her. Because he has no idea where she is. He just knows that she's on this island in Hawaii. And so he gets there and he calls his sister that she works with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another great scene that I love because it's showing a new change in Barry. Because she's ribbing him because he wants to know what hotel she's staying
at.
He
sticks up for himself.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah, and she's like, "Why do you want to know? What do you care? What are you doing? What do you? He's like, just give me the fucking number. I'm tired of this bullshit. Just give me the fucking number before I fucking break your fucking face." And I just,
you are really close to Adam Sandler there.
Yeah, because I love this movie. I've seen this movie a ton, dude, and I love that part.
I mean, if I close my eyes, like I would thought I was
and
in the room
he's
with
in
Adam
a crowd.
Sandler.
He's at a parade, and he's talking into a phone, and it's a quiet rage. Like he's, oh man. And she gives him the fucking hotel that she's staying at.
Mm-hmm.
He calls her, and they meet in this hotel lobby. And they walk towards each other, and he has his hand out to shake her hand. And Lena, of course, like she has through most of this movie, takes control and takes point.
Mm-hmm.
And pushes the hand aside and hugs him, because that's what she wants.
Yeah.
And Barry immediately falls into that. And I love this scene, because it shows them in silhouette. And as soon as they embrace, a massive crowd of people are walking past them. And it's just this great silhouette breakup of them. But they are the focus. They're the middle of the screen. That's who you're looking at. But it's just a beautiful little... It's great. I don't know where to go with that.
No, it's okay.
Do you have anything to interject here?
I'm
really pushing forward.
Well, I'm kind of waiting for a specific part. Because I have a theory that might tie back into the truck theory. But I don't want to jump ahead. So you keep going.
Okay.
After lobby scene.
Well, after lobby scene, you know, they go to her hotel room and they have sex.
Mm-hmm.
There's some great scenes here, and I this was Mandy's first time seeing this movie.
Yeah.
She watched it with me, and I tell her these things now because it's funny. But before they have the sex, they're looking at each other, and you know, they're saying some very weird things to each other.
Yes.
He says, "Your face is so fucking cute.
I
just want to smash
it with
a sledgehammer."
Yeah.
And she says, "I just want to scratch your face off and eat your eyeballs and put them in my mouth and suck on them until they pop. And, you know, I'll be, ever since we've watched this movie, every time when Mandy and I get into bed, I tell her, you know, your face is so fucking cute. I just want to smash it with a sledgehammer. And, you know, it's very weird and it's awkward, mm-hmm. but it's also very cute.
Well, it is because it's two weird people finding each other.
Exactly.
Who, like, get it, who understand what the other one's doing. That's a great scene. It's indicative. That's a great indicative scene of their relationship.
And then after, you know, it's very tasteful. They don't show us anything provocative or sexual.
No, yeah.
This is probably my favorite scene in the movie, and I was openly weeping, and I do every time I see this. After she calls into work, she asks Barry, you know, she's like, well, don't you have to go do your business thing? And he says, oh, I don't have work. I came here for you. God, that gets me, man.
It gets her, too, because as soon as she hears that, she's on board.
Yeah, well, I love that. She's fully in. And, like, dude, this was the second time I was just crying, but this was a different cry. I was smiling. I was so happy. It moves me so much, man, in this part. I love it, dude, because it's pure and it's raw, and he's just like, oh, no, I don't have work.
Mm-hmm.
I came all this way for you.
It's a smart thing they do with this relationship is there are these things that in, like, lesser movies would be dragged out. Like, yeah. This, him going there, it would be like a series of gimmicks until he finally reveals, oh, I'm only here for you.
Yeah.
It would be like a big thing. And it's not. It's just a simple, like...
And it's so perfect.
And then it ends. And they know when to move on and be like, here's the new thing.
Mm-hmm. And then they come back, and, you know, that's the extent of my notes, so I'm going to let you kind of really take over here, and I'll just kind of interject wherever. And
okay, well, essentially, they kind of fall in love with each other. They fall really quickly in love, and then he has to go back to town for something. I don't remember what.
Well, she does, too. I mean, her business trip is over. Okay. He hangs out with her during her business trip.
So he goes back, and he's going to kind of put a stop to the mattress people. Oh, when do they get into the car wreck?
It's right after this. Okay. Barry has been assaulted before this. The mattress man sends three brothers to rough him up and collect his money, which they do. He gives him $500, the most he can take out of an ATM a day.
Yep.
And then he gets very scared when a brother goes and punches him in the face. And it shocks him and scares him, and he immediately gets up and runs away. And that's another great scene where the truck pulls up after there's this elaborate chase scene where he's doing all these crazy dips and dodges, and then he's running down the street, and the truck just pulls up next to him, and they're like,
where the fuck are you going, man?
We know where you live. And then he just sort of stops running. And so that happened all before this Hawaii that we talked about.
So then after Hawaii, he goes back and he's going to start sticking up for himself. Like, doesn't he try to call them out and say he's calling the police or like...
Yeah, in Hawaii he called him. He's like, this is Barry. You guys have taken my $500 for me and I want it back. So, you know, just call me back and let me know when we can do that because I want my money back and it's not right. So you're going
to
fix it.
Okay. Well, I don't remember. All right. I'm essentially trying to get to that car wreck.
That's right.
How do they meet up again?
Who?
Because Barry and Lena. Because they're in the car.
Yeah,
It's
after Hawaii. They've decided they want to spend more time together.
Okay.
So she's with him after Hawaii. They're going to his place.
Yes.
And as they're pulling into his driveway.
Okay. So it wasn't... I thought I was forgetting something in the
you're
middle.
You're right there.
Okay. So it does go straight to the car wreck. Well, they get into a car crash. She's in the passenger seat. And as he's, like, kind of recovering, he looks over, and she's bleeding a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit of blood runs down her head. Like, she's obviously fine, but he loses it.
Oh, does he lose it?
And it's this quick, maybe, like, 10-second action scene. Like, it's really quick, but it looks effective.
And he beats the fuck out of four dudes.
And he does, and it looks really slick, too. Like, it's a very minimal thing.
Yeah,
but it's
not,
impressive.
Like, flashy.
Yeah.
It's just, like, efficient.
It's him with a crowbar, just, like you said, efficiently taking four of these blonde thugs that work for the mattressman out.
Yep, smashes the window. Yeah. And then he actually gives it back to the scared one in the back.
Mm-hmm. He just puts it in the car after breaking the front windshield.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's a great scene.
Yeah.
But at this point, he realizes he's going to have to do something about this because...
He has to solve it because they're going to ruin
his
relationship
Exactly. So he goes to confront...
Well, he takes her to the hospital.
Yes. Yes, that's right. This is a big thing.
To get her wound addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And as she's doing that, Barry sort of slinks away and then leaves to go solve this.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls them from his house and he talks to the mattress man.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Philip Seymour Hoffman, as we've stated. And Philip Seymour Hoffman tells him to go fuck himself. No, Barry tells him to go fuck himself. And it throws him through a loop. And he's like, did you just tell me to go fuck myself?
The second time around, that's exactly what
happened. That's it, pal. And so he tells him, you're fucking done or something. And so Barry immediately, he's in a fit of rage. And I love this scene because he just walks away with his phone.
Oh, you're skipping.
What am I skipping?
You're skipping like the big, like, I have love in my life and it makes me strong. Like where he confronts him.
No, but
this is before he leaves. This is before he walks out and leaves.
No, but before when he calls him on the phone, he's telling that. He tells him to go fuck himself on the phone.
That was on the phone.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I jumped way ahead.
See, and then I forget what is
said. What is the fit of rage thing then, that after the phone thing? What's his fit of rage?
He says something. He threatens him again. And so Barry's like, well, and when he beat up the guys in the truck, he saw that they were from Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knows about that.
And then he goes to the mattress man.
He calls 411 and gets the listing. Yeah. And then, yeah, but the entire time he's walked there, he has the phone. And he's driven there with his office phone in his hand, and it's just got the cord dangling.
And as
he walks into the mattress store, Philip Seymour Hoffman's in the back getting a haircut.
Which is a great little quirky thing.
Yeah. And
also, if you notice where he's getting the haircut, there's a very prominent piano to the left, much like Barry has the harmonium.
And I hadn't noticed that.
Which comes into play when they do confront each other.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about. Please keep summarizing.
Right there. Yeah, we're getting right there.
You summarize so much better than me. So you summarize there and I'll jump in.
So Barry has walked in and Philip Seymour Hoffman is getting his hair cut and then eventually notices that Barry's standing in the doorway and he turns and they have this little confrontation and Barry just wants him, he just wants it done. You know, he's lost $500, whatever. He just does not want any interactions from them anymore. He wants it to stop. And he's like, you know, I will beat the ever-loving hell out of you. So I would say that's that.
And then Philip Seymour Hoffman, which a lot of the blonde thugs that were helping him have been saying, says something like, well, you were a pervert.
Yeah. Everybody calls him a pervert.
You were a pervert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he jumps up and confronts him, and they stand face to face, mere inches from each other.
Mm-hmm. Where he says the line, I have love in my life, I am strong.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. And it's just showing him being a, not like, not a man, because he wasn't not a man, but like standing up for himself,
again,
taking care
being
of things.
Strong.
Because he does have this love in his life that he cares about.
He has
it's
something
not about
to live
him.
For. Yeah. He has purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he says this great line. So again, I would say that's that, Mattress Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman says, that's all you want. That's that. And so Barry goes to leave.
It's a moment of kind of understanding
between
the two, which is why I think you see the piano there.
Okay.
Because it's everything shaping up for like, oh, Barry's going to beat him up with all the rage because it's leading this up. We're being prepped with all this rage. And then we see him take out the blonde thug. So you think him and Philip Seymour Hoffman are getting into a fight here.
I'm
so
glad they don't,
you see the piano there and you're like, oh, visual cue. It's going to be kind of harmonious. It's going to be calmer than you think.
Oh, I never put that together. I do like that that's the way it goes, that they don't fight. But then as Barry's leaving and he's at the front door, Philip Seymour Hoffman can't let it go. He has to, as this character has been shown, he's a cocky, slimy piece of shit. He has to have the final word in, and as Barry's leaving, he runs out in front of a store full of people. He says, and don't you ever fucking come back here, you fucking pervert. And Barry turns around quick, and Philip Seymour Hoffman just puts his hands up, and he goes, that's that? So I'm essentially cutting it off again and letting him know that that's that, and Barry leaves.
It's a great touch.
And Lena tells him, you know, he finally goes back to Lena, and she's very upset. She's like, you left me at the hospital. You left me, Barry. And he's just like, I'm sorry, Lena, if you just let me come back, please. I have a million airline miles, and I don't even want to do anything. I'll just travel everywhere with you. I'll go everywhere you need to go. I just want to be with you forever.
Mm-hmm.
And Lena's like, you left me at the hospital. You can't do that. And he's like, okay. And you know that Barry won't ever do that again. He's never going to leave Lena again. And they embrace, and we get the music swell and curtains, and it's glorious.
It is.
You've seen this movie now through my eyes, man. Like,
I have. I can see, I can see why it means so much to you. It comes across clearly. Whereas Drive, I was like, I have these issues, and you're like, I just like it. It's harder here.
That is, I do like, but I love this movie, man.
I think you made a very strong case as to why.
I don't know if it will ever lose my number one spot. You know, things move on. You know, I've had different favorite bands, different favorite things throughout life. But this is, God, man, it just reaffirmed it more. Like, again, I hadn't seen this movie in probably 6-7 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time. And I was worried, but I was pretty confident making the list. beforehand, like, oh yeah, I tell everybody this is my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely still is. So nothing's changing in that aspect. Number one, Punch Drunk Love.
With a Bullet. Pitch Perfect 2.
Thank you, Paul Thomas Anderson, for this movie. I like a lot of your stuff. This one really hits me, so thank you.
It's
That's all I can really say. That's all I got to say. That's where I'm going to leave it. So, yeah, I don't have anything else to add.
Drop the mic. Is that it? You're done. Boom.
No. Thank you everybody. Thank you for listening to me ramble. I got a little personal on this one. I opened up. Mm-hmm. That's cool. I expect the same from you on Eternal Sunshine.
Well, that's lofty.
You better open up a little bit. I mean, don't make me fucking flail out here in the wind.
I can. It's just going to be, it's different.
Yeah, it is different.
One's a nice one to be personal about because it's kind of a happy story. Eternal Sunshine is not happy. It's about a breakup, and that's why it affected me.
Fair enough. I'm curious to get into that and see, you know. I'm curious to watch it again. It's probably been about the same amount of time since I've seen that and Punch Drunk. Mm-hmm. So it'll be good to watch it again. I've got it. Yeah. I'm ready to go. So
very thematic.
It's in this thematic ballpark. It's incredibly surreal.
Yeah.
I know that.
It's a little bit more, but it deals with love in much the same way. It's just the complete opposite take.
I think that goes to show you and I where we're at just as dudes and why I think we do get along because those are the two movies we picked as number ones without ever having talked about
it. That's true. Very, very similar, but equally different in interesting ways.
And that's us to a T, you and me, buddy. So high five on...
I'm interesting. Yay!
There we go. That's going to do it, folks. We're going to wrap it up here. Thank you so much for listening. Again, we are the Experience Grind Podcast. You can reach us at...
Experience Grind Podcast at Facebook. That's facebook.com/Experience Grind Podcast. And you can also find us on Twitter. Where at, Kyle?
At EXP Grind Podcast. Again, there's not a .com. I always want to put
.com.
It feels natural. Maybe I'll change the Twitter name.
It feels wrong.
It's just @ EXP Grind Podcast.
You update the Twitter quite a bit. So.
I try to do more. You know, my goal, I've been reading a lot about Twitter, but I got to try to step up the tweet game.
Good luck.
I want to get 5 a day.
I really liked your there's a shout out. I'm gonna give you a shout out. I really liked your tweet about the Pride and Prejudices and Zombies being.
I called them out on that too. I tagged them. I added.
You did.
God, that movie looks garbage.
It does.
And it seems to be the only fucking ad Hulu wants to play for me right now. So I've seen that stupid trailer every commercial break on every show I fucking watched in the past 3 weeks. God, it's infuriating. Just looks like such shit. Worst movie of 2016. I'm calling it. I'm going to watch it and watch other shitty movies and reinforce that narrative at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Be the fucking worst one. I have no doubt.
Adam Sandler will announce a project. It will be that one.
That'll be the worst one
Adam Sandler comes out with now, because from Punch Drunk, it's been a steady decline.
I guarantee goddamn to you, Ridiculous 6 is better than Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies.
I would like to bet on that, but we would have to find a way to do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's all subjective, but I bet that I would have a better time watching Ridiculous 6 than Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies. Knowing that Ridiculous 6 is absolute garbage, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I know that I would probably have... at least a chuckle out of that at some point. So,
okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
There it is. We're going to end here. Thank you, everybody.
For real, we are ending.
We'll catch you next time, where we will be doing your number two game,
which is Rock Band 3.
Yeah, and we're going to have a big party for that the night before. I'm really looking forward to that.
Should be fun.
Hopefully, we'll be sort of celebrity. People want to talk to us at this party. All of our friends that we know anyway.
That's true.
So thank you guys. We'll catch you next time.